is the 10th voice. Kansas City's LGBTQ+ radio magazine. The 10th voice, because we refuse to be silent.
Minasan, konnichiwa. It's your goddess prince from the land of the rising sun, and this is the middle way. And happy pride. Wait, let's pause. I'm joined, as always, by my trusty sidekick in crime, Rachel. Howdy, Rachel.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going fantastic, thanks.
It's very warm outside.
It's incredibly warm. I have a sundress on because of that.
She looks like a Greek goddess right now. Like she's supposed to go to a temple and pour some oil over a sacrificial lamb of some kind, and Aphrodite will be all happy about it.
I told you that was a secret. You weren't supposed to say.
What? What's a secret?
I don't know.
I don't know what that is. My mouth's too big. I have a radio show.
Oh, right. Sorry. My fault.
I think we have some friends in the waiting room, in the online
Zoom call,
void.
We do.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Rachel.
Anybody else?
And I have Una right here by me, too.
Ah, sharing a couch like you do.
I don't want to be on video.
But luckily, none of our listeners can see that.
That's true.
I wish our listeners could see me right now because I am just fantastic.
You're pretty fabulous over there, as always. Shirt. Yes, the short shirts are here. It's got a very interesting tank top.
I do.
Yes.
I do have
And that. That's your fashion update for the 10th voice.
Yeah, I know. I almost wore, I bought these orange jean shorts from Target yesterday, and they look like an orange creamsicle. And
I saw the picture.
I was going to wear those with a crop top, but my belly was sort of poking over them because they're a little tight. So I was like, no, let's not.
Gosh, I have no idea what that's like.
Anywho, I feel like happy Pride. It's Pride Month. And if you happen to be a member of the LGBTQIA community and associated with any LGBTQIA serving organization, this month is very busy for you. So busy that you kind of just want it to hurry up and get over with. Because everybody wants your opinion. Everybody wants to fundraise for you. Everybody needs your advice. And it's crazy. I mean, it's fun.
It
but
is
like
fun.
Everyone, you know, I'm jealous of the days when I was just a newly outed person working at a pharmacy and I didn't have any social obligations and I could just party.
Just enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is nice to know that.
I started Pride Week off opening up the month Pride celebration for Wabtec Corporation. They had me do a broadcast. It was an intersectional pride presentation on crossing the gender divide in STEM because I had passing privilege on the male side of STEM, as it's called, and the female side of STEM, and talk about the differences of having worked on one side for 18 years and the other side for almost 10. So they had their women's and feminist employee resource group and the Pride employee resource group sponsoring it. And I was pretty shocked because they simulcast it out to India, to Japan, to Germany, France, all these places around the world. And it was a really great audience. And they were really enthused. I had a great time doing that.
That sounds fantastic. Yeah, that's quite a nosedive off the privilege ladder when you transition in this direction, for sure.
Yeah,
that was one thing I emphasized, is that male privilege in STEM, you don't have any concept of its existence and just how much it matters until you've benefited from it, even unconsciously, and it's suddenly stripped away from you. It's turns your entire world upside down, as if everything else in transition doesn't already do the same thing.
That's very true.
Well, we kicked off Pride with a massive benefit concert with Stonewall Inn in New York City. They did a little 3-hour benefit concert for the community center, and all of these stars were there, and they were just raising a ridiculous amount of money, and that was...
It was amazing, actually, yeah. to see, and it was so well done, and all over the country, too. They just kept stopping in. It's like, oh, here's Amy Poehler, and
I know, here's Alexander. Yeah. There's Demi Lovato, and it's like, oh, God, hi, everybody, and then when you see yourself on TV, like, I'm used to doing, like, the little... you know, relationships with our local reporters. I'm like, yeah. You know, I run into my neighbors in my apartment. They're like, I saw you on TV. I'm like, I know. What oppressive thing is happening to queer people today? I'm on the television talking about it. I get it. We got it. But like, you have this, like, national, you know, almost feels like being on, like, CNN or something. And I'm like, oh, God, everyone's watching me.
Right. And it was streaming live all over the world. So,
and
it was
stuck there forever on their YouTube page. So I... Whew. Girl,
you are immortalized. It was really well done.
Demoralizing, though, because they kind of ask you the same thing each year. It's like, do we have equity yet? Nope. Okay, well, we'll check back next year.
Right. Here's a rainbow sticker.
Yeah. Now, my new philosophy in life is, if you change your logo to a rainbow during Pride season, I better see a check.
Yeah, that should be a requirement. Absolutely. Because, it's sort of encouraging to see when you go to your local mall or go shopping and see it. It's great, but you also know that it's paper thin as well and has really nothing to do with folks who are doing the work on the ground.
Yeah, it's one of those weird instances of, you know, you don't want to necessarily criticize it with the same ferocity as you criticize bad policies, because visibility does have... you know, like, statistically, sociologically, like, report, academically speaking, it does have meaning. It does make a difference. However, simply changing your American Airlines or United logo into a rainbow does not necessarily stop those bad policies from happening. So it's like, it's this weird give and take. You're like, cool, we love to see it. There's rainbows everywhere from June 1st to June 30th, but... on July 1st, I really need you to go down to that Capitol and say, this is stupid, and we're not giving you any money.
Yes.
So, it's a weird balance that stinks in this very contextualized world.
St. Patrick's Day. I mean, like, yay, we're celebrating Irish Pride by getting drunk and stuff.
Oh, I feel like I celebrate Irish Pride every weekend then.
You got your beer green every weekend just to have an excuse.
You see, he drinks rainbow beer, right?
Well, you can't really do rainbow drink unless you do like a Pouce Cafe. But I tell you, you go into any bar around here and you ask for a Pouce Cafe, and they just give you that look.
I heard some of the bars, it's an instant banning event.
Yeah, my. Probably should be.
I have no idea what that is.
Pouce Café is a drink where you layer different alcohols in different colored alcohols in different densities, so it makes like a rainbow flag.
Oh.
You have to pour it in very gently, like with a pipette or a straw. It's really hard and fussy to make. It takes the bartender like 15 minutes to do it, and they hate doing it.
Okay.
No, thank you. I'd rather just have six drinks with six different colors.
Ooh, that's even better. A rainbow flight. Yes.
Any other?
I think they should do the yellow shots like that with the separate colors, making it the rainbow.
Yeah, it's just, this month is just hyper busy. I'm getting married in 14 days. And then flying off to Hawaii, so goodbye, Kansas.
Incredible. That's wonderful.
That is so awesome.
And I'm staying there a week, so nobody need me for a week, because my phone will be turned off.
But we always need you.
Right. Well, make it so they can't find you is the trick.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. No, just
because you're going to be needed, there's no doubt. But make you hard to get a hold of, hard to find.
Let's see. My little sister turned 17 today. They grew up so fast.
Wow.
I remember falling asleep on my great-grandpa's green chair with her in my arms as a baby. And now she's a brat.
Mm.
So, wonderful.
I think at 17, she's growing out of the brat stage.
People enter that phase at different times in their life, and it's also not like...
I think you also get like phases depending on like your sexual orientation and gender identity. You have like your, I thought I was straight, sassy phase, and then... then you're like, oh, Rudd, I'm gay. Now you get your gay sassy phase. And then after that, you're like, oh man, maybe I'm not really gay. I'm actually trans. And then you get a whole new phase of sassiness, which is, you know.
That's not untrue. Yeah. It feels very true. I feel a little
Rachel
called
with
out.
The sassiness today. But yeah, it just sort of things are busy. And so busy. Yeah, I got a research grant to do some work on anti-Asian bias, like re-examining historical policies and Supreme Court rulings, and things are just piling up so much that this is kind of my last show.
Yeah.
Because...
On that note, do you want to share your first song today before the break?
I did. So since I can't do anything in the next few months, I wanted to give you more songs than one. So you get three today. And here's the first one.
We'll be right back.
So yes, that was not the most... I wanted to explain things before you got my song, but there was just so much to catch up on. Research is picking up, and that's sort of the entire thing that's putting a lot more pressure on me. Getting research grants that come with money and expectations of publications makes life a little bit more hectic for me. And now that Miss Rona is retreating, thanks to the power of vaccinations, research protocols are also changing. And instead of thinking about doing research now, I can actually go out into the world and do it. And you all know that I have a research project that literally takes me across 47 different municipalities in the Midwest. And and it's not just a matter of getting there. It's a matter of planning the questions, trying to get participants to do the surveys, trying to make sure that there's a law enforcement officer that's willing to even work with me or talk to me or let me drive with them and record them. And that's a lot of background work that just forces me to sit in my office at home. And I need to rest is essentially the thing. And I'm, like I said, I'm getting married and I want to be able to, you know, celebrate that queer love and focus on my relationship and my marriage. God, I'm going to say the word
right?
Marriage. Marriage.
Yeah.
It just sounds so powerful, so legal.
It does. Mm. Wait till you're introduced as my husband. This is my husband.
I know,
tomorrow.
Right? Oh, God,
I know.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, say it again. Husband. But I mean, I've enjoyed every second of this. I loved being able to give everyone some Japanese culture, some Japanese wisdom. I'm sorry you've had to listen to this lispy voice for an hour each month, but I hope, you know, anybody who has been listening and that they've received some sort of knowledge that they wouldn't otherwise have gotten, and that hopefully I've reached a few people. That's always been my hope and my drive for this, but going to miss everybody.
Yes, well, we've absolutely loved having you as one of the hosts on the 10th Voice, and you came in at a major transitional time for the show and just kind of picked up like you'd been doing it forever. So it's been such a pleasure working with you on this project.
I must be a natural, as they say.
Something like that.
All right. Well, so we're going to finish up our Drop of Enlightenment series on the unjust or injustice system for LGBT people. Last month, we talked about what happens to LGBTQI people while they're in the criminal justice system, and we found lots of problems there. And I'm, you know, hoping that we can finish this off with the third one, which is what happens when LGBTQI people leave the system and how difficult it is to actually, like, you know, pick yourself back up after you've already been through a harrowing experience and dealt with discrimination getting into the system, discrimination in the system, and now here. But anywho, our biggest problems that we face when it comes to getting out of the system and trying to rebuild your life is there's when it comes to reentry programs, there's a lack of competency. We don't really have a lot of programs, even in states and places that happen to be what we would consider open and affirming and progressive when it comes to our community's issues. When it comes to the criminal justice system, that's not exactly the most diverse when it comes to making sure that individuals are able to leave the system and build their lives back and better. When it comes to probation and parole, really common mechanisms or roads that individuals take and utilize to avoid to lighten sentences and stuff like that, those individuals in those programs, the probation officers, parole officers, all of them, they're not trained on, you know, even the basics regarding our community, and therefore they're going to hold the same sort of understanding of, well, you know, I don't see color, that sort of stuff. And it's like, well, I need you to see it because of patterns, and it's you know, you need to be trained on this. If this is you need to know how I got here, the systems in place that pushed me to get here, the systems in place that made it uncomfortable being in the system, and you're supposed to be helping me rebuild my, you know, rebuild myself to, oh goodness, there's like a word for when it comes to our criminal justice system, you know, after you pay your debt to society, that sort of language that you should be able to let go of the past. And the problem is that nobody really pays attention to that. So when it comes to getting out of the system, we don't have LGBT competent reentry programs, and we don't have LGBT competent probation officers and parole officers who understand the issues affecting the community that landed us in this position in the first place, which is a problem. When it comes to reentry programs, you also have a lot of reentry programs that have a sort of like religious base to them, because they believe in, you know, forgiveness and yada yada. Just like when it comes to like Alcoholics Anonymous and all those different things, all of them have like this religious spin to them, which makes individuals who don't belong to that sociocultural lifestyle choice. See what I did good there? One. Yeah, if you don't belong to any church or you don't even believe in that sort of religiosity, especially in the United States, that sort of evangelical spin on God can forgive you and therefore we have this reentry program, they don't want you. If they do accept you, they're going to essentially put you on a path of, that will be far more destructive to your own gender identity and sexual orientation, because they're going to want you to change that. And they're also going to feed you these bogus lies that essentially tell you that the reason why you turned to crime or the reason why this happened to you is because of your identity, which means that those reentry programs are not helpful. And that's essentially what a lot of red states, no offense, rely on. They don't rely on a secular governmental system of reentry programs and forgiveness programs and parole activities. There's always like a tidbit of religiosity shoved in there, according to this report. There is indefinite detention through civil commitment. So individuals who might be suffering from some sort of mental health condition, they might have a court order that states that they don't have the ability to take care of themselves, and therefore their caretaker or whoever the court has appointed to be their caretaker can essentially stop them from living their life authentically. And that really happens to LGBT youth, that they will be able to convince a court that the gender identity that their child has, that the teenager has, is actually a very bad mental condition, and therefore they should not have the ability to decide their own future. And they go get this court order, and it basically says, oh, the parents are always going to be in charge because they don't know that they're a boy, or they don't know that they're a girl. It's like, you don't know science, and therefore you're doing more harm. So that's a huge problem. The other thing that makes it difficult with these reentry programs is because our identities are often linked with sexuality, states will overuse the sex offender registry for ridiculous things that are not predatory. They're more like victimless crimes. You just happen to be, you know, enjoying another's company in the park, and suddenly, boom, because it was two men or two women or whatever, you're automatically listed as a danger to society because you had your private parts out in public. And that's like an overuse, an over-exploitation of that system, which makes things worse, because that's a permanent you do not get off of that very easily. Difficult finding housing. Again, a lot of these reentry programs have a religious spin to them. Inadequate health care after release. What are one of the few things, going through like school, every single time like I apply for some type of funding or if I apply for things, it always asks me if I have been convicted of a felony. And if you click yes, then you're automatically disbarred. So you have to think how that would compound problems for our community. If you got convicted of a crime, you're no longer eligible for certain funding that, or programs, social services, that you need to stabilize your life and actually get on a path to where you don't turn to survival economics in the first place. And so it's all these barriers of trying to create people that act in a box and stay in a box. This is sort of how heteronormativity cements itself as socialization. The way that we think of society, we craft laws, and those laws are reflective of our majority, and the majority is heteronormativity. And so they put forth these guidelines. Well, you don't get benefits if you've been convicted of a crime. And you probably were convicted of a crime for a victimless crime or a bogus sexual offender charge because it was daylight and people are so used to seeing straight couples just sit there and make out and get all handsy with each other. But the moment the moment I kiss my soon-to-be husband at Target while we're waiting for our Starbucks, that's when all eyes turn. What are they going to do next? What are they going to do next? I'm going to drink my coffee. That's what I'm going to do next. So it's that heightened focus. And because of all of those programs essentially being difficult for us to get into because of X, Y, and Z, that compounds problems. And sort of, if you read, there's a sociologist, Donald Black, that wrote an article, Crime as Social Control. And I admit, even being a PhD student reading it the first time, it was like, oh yeah, we use crime to control people. But there's like another layer to it in the sense that you have systems in place that do not cater to our needs, our problems, or even acknowledge that there is discrimination against us, and therefore we don't trust those, have faith in those systems, and therefore we kind of create our own system, in which case, right? So if I can't go get benefits through a religious-based charity because I happen to be a queer person, and Jesus doesn't like that, which Jesus was totally for that. I'm just letting you know. If I ever come back as a guest, I will give you the spill on Jesus. We will spill the tea, or I guess the wine in this case, or the water. I don't know what it is. Anywho, the point is that if these are services that are available, but we get discriminated from them, then we get discriminated from the system as a whole and therefore have to go back to relying on survival economics, which is forbidden in our neoliberal capitalistic hello world, and therefore the cycle of abuse just continues. And no one is out here. Well, that's an exaggeration. I'm just in a mood. Mercury's in retrograde, and I'm in a mood. There are very few people actually out there screaming about the systems in place that keep this happening. And that's the problem, is the cycle keeps continuing, and no one wants to go after the root cause. They just want to have a whole bunch of Band-Aids out here saying, oh, you scraped your knee. I'm like, no, I'm literally, my intestines are falling out. Like, I don't need a Band-Aid. I need you to fix the problem. And they don't want to do it. And so reports like this will keep popping up. Another problem is difficulties finding employment. Same difference. You have to remove the box. Sometimes you... Lord, some of the things that people get in trouble for these days, it's just ridiculous. But they have to checkmark the box that they've been to court or they've been to prison or something like that. And, oh, we don't trust you anymore. And I'm like, there's context to all of this. And essentially what you're doing is you're putting forth this binary choice. Have you been convicted of a crime? Sure. What crime? Well, I don't know. I got charged with assault because I was getting the living daylights kicked out of me by a bunch of cis heterosexual white guys. And I decided to defend myself and broke his nose. And suddenly I'm the bad guy and I get convicted because we don't have a criminal justice system that even recognizes the fact that there are systems in place that are just going to constantly harm us. And so now I'm not eligible for employment because I defended myself. And this is actually something that happened to me, not to this extent. I didn't get charged with assault. But when I worked as an assistant manager for a pharmacy, I had an individual come in. I have a lisp. It's very powerful. Came in. When I came out, I came out. Like, there was that closet didn't just get open. That blew the closet up. It's gone. There's no more closet, which is really hard for my clothes. But I came out, so, and I wanted everyone to know. I wanted to be as visible as possible and authentic as possible. So anytime I worked at the pharmacy, I would have some, like, gay pride pin on. And this person just came in and verbally harassed me and called me every epithet in the book while I was working. And it hurt so badly that I literally just sat in the office to cool off. And there's cameras everywhere in retail world, if anybody didn't know that. And a week later, I get written up and punished because I spent too much time in the office cooling down from the verbal assault I got from a customer. And even trying to explain that to my supervisor, it was like, there's no excuse for this. You know, shake it off. Yada yada. I'm like, you don't understand systemic oppression or discrimination at all, do you? Because you are literally telling me to take that traumatic event, which is tied to other traumatic events that happen to our community, and say, get over it. It's like, okay, person of privilege, of great, amazing privilege, who makes probably $250,000 while I'm making 40 something. Like, we will not be friends. And I eventually left, but those are the types of situations I'm talking about. When you do something for yourself based off of a traumatic event or a circumstance such as defending yourself or taking a break, for God's sakes, heaven's sake, sorry, Lord. If you do that, the system is going to say, why did you get to sit in the office for an hour while one other person only got to sit for 15 minutes. It's like, because that person has all the privilege in the world. And I know it's going to happen. If I kick out every single homophobe and every single transphobe that walks inside the retail store, I'm going to get in trouble for doing that. Now, this seems very superficial because this is retail world and this is actual employment, but we can heighten that now. Take it to another level based off this report. Now we're talking about instances where police get called and you get interrogated and sometimes you get arrested. It's the same situation, and individuals in positions of power, knowing very well cognitively and logically on June 1st to June 30th that, yay, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. But the moment July 1st rolls around, you're not allowed to be yourself anymore. You're not allowed to talk about the oppressions that you've been facing. You're not allowed to talk about the verbal assaults. You're not allowed to talk about the fact you got your face bashed in. Nope. Go back to normal. And that's not what liberation looks like. At all. So. Yeah. It just really... It's one of those things where it's like... Because I do this for a living. This is what I do. I run around the country. I get invited to do these speaking engagements with people in the criminal justice system or with first responders, training them on how to recognize the root causes of why this community doesn't trust them in the first place. And the problem is, some of these bureaucratic sort of public servant agencies, though they have a lot of power, they don't have the power to ignore the law. So it's like all of these moving parts. How do we fix this? Y'all, we have to do better. I have to do better. And I feel like I'm doing okay. And I still need to do more. Because all we're doing is hurting ourselves. And it's not good. So you get introduced to the criminal justice system by your existence. You get convicted in the criminal justice system because of your existence. And then when you get out, nobody understands the root cause of why you were in there and therefore won't give you that second chance. And then the cycle just continues because you don't have any avenue. We can't solve this issue of an injustice system unless laws and policies change. And there are catastrophic effects to this cycle. Absolutely catastrophic effects to this. This isn't just individuals going to prison for wrong reasons or maybe even right reasons. But then as soon as that happens, you lose your ability to do anything, essentially, including your ability to hold institutions that are supposed to be serving you accountable. You don't get to vote anymore. And if you don't get to vote, you don't get to go out and yell at your politicians who are supposed to be doing work on your behalf because they look at you and say, well, you can't vote. Your voice doesn't matter. So you have to sit there and work extra hard to get people who are in privileged positions to get them to understand why they need to be listening to you. And you still get labeled, oh, well, you're just a queer person. You're just one of those awful individuals that my church warns me about. It's like, okay, Karen, we're here gonna have a long chat.
Can't you just go be gay at home and not be out in public?
Can't you go be white at home, Karen? Why you gotta be white in my pharmacy right now? Your coupon's expired. I'm not taking it. It's expired. But you can't. It's like redemption. There's a word, and I'm gonna get stuck on this word, and I swear. Like in 3 months, I'm going to call in randomly whenever there's an ability for me to call in and just be like, I remember the word. Because that's just who I am. Anywho. So that's sort of part three. Sorry, that was more of a ramble instead of like a reading a nice cute little script because Mercury is indeed in retrograde and I'm in a mood. So I decided to get upset about it.
And it's Gemini season, so it's the time to talk a lot too.
I'm a Gemini moon.
There you go.
I don't know what that even means. I'm really bad at that, too. I have to have an app to tell me.
Yes.
But anyhow, thoughts before we quiet down the mood with another lovely song?
When you bring all of that stuff up and you see it sort of laid out in front of you, it feels so daunting about what can I do exactly besides raise my voice and, you know, write my politicians and stuff. And so sometimes I hear things like this and I feel powerless, actually, because it feels like so much. It's like, how can I do anything as an individual?
So yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But I know when I first came out, one of the things I've been trying to do is to connect to my community and to do whatever I can to help someone. And I've sort of got it in my head that it's okay to do a little thing well as opposed to doing the huge thing. It's like, clearly we can't tackle all of the issues that you just laid out for us in one fell swoop. But we can, like you're doing, talking with law enforcement folks, and maybe you can change the minds and hearts and minds of some people and do that really well. And I think you have to, as an activist, at least for me anyway, I have to sort of get my head around that the things I do don't have to be the ultimate thing. It can be just a thing. And as long as you keep doing that, all the steps will add up to something eventually.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, I'm really glad you said that because that's kind of the point to our last little section when we get to it, our last segment, So I want everyone to hold on to that thought that Rachel just had on like small steps, because it will be very, very important for you to hold on to that energy when we go into the next segment. But yeah.
Should we play this next song?
We should.
Okay.
It's a little more somber.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Well, last month we broke the news that the Kansas City Center for Inclusion, the LGBTQIA Community Center for the region, was moving to a new location. Well, that has officially happened, and officially we are now located at 37 Broadway Boulevard, not that far from the station where I'm speaking from. And if you've not been there yet, I really do suggest you go and see it, because it's not mine, it's yours. If you have time and are willing and able, and I'm exactly reason 11. Anyway.
Yes, if you're interested in the new space.
Anything Absolutely. And everything that goes into it should be made with you in mind. There are so many within the community that feel left out, and there aren't programs or spaces where they can simply exist without having to pay money or conform to some sociological pressure. Yes, queer people do that too. We pressure people to conform to things. Stop it. I need to stop it.
Stop.
So we need you. Without your perspective, without your insight, and without your experience, we really can't progress. We can't design programs or services that you need or want. The space itself is bigger and more beautiful than our last space. There's heightened visibility for our community as we take over 3 floors. And there are windows, windows, windows. It's like the windows to the queer community's soul. Mm-hmm. Eyes? I don't know. Anyhow, it also has a complete kitchen capable of cooking meals rather than ordering pizza and keeping it in a tiny fridge. So you're excited. How excited I am for that ability. It truly is much better and brighter. But that does not mean there aren't challenges. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that I tend to talk about variables and context for issues. All of us are subject to context and constraints. And that's just a part of life. That's the part of the struggle for progress. If we ignore the context, if we ignore the constraints, then we don't get the full picture, and we're likely to fail in whatever we're setting off to do. So I've often tended to simply project the positive of the situation and celebrate the accomplishment of an issue or a triumph. And this is what I tried to do with the center and its move to a new location. And that has actually caused a lot of speculation and some concern and rumors and disappointments, and it's all flourishing to the top. And it's understandable. But at some point, you just want to invite everyone over and give a long rambling lecture about what happened, why it happened, and what is being done to fix it. Well, guess what I'm about to do? This is my last chance, and this is a platform to explain the entirety of the situation on top of celebrating the accomplishments, because there are, in fact, accomplishments of progress, equity, and justice, even when there are disappointments. You can try your best and still cause harm. You can not get everything you want, but still celebrate that you got something. That's the whole purpose of this sort of show, the middle way, the twofold path. Two things can be correct at the same time. So let's dive in. First, the center's move was not voluntary at all. The streetcar is being built all the way down Main Street where the center was located, and that caused a lot of greedy money, hungry people that are not even from the city, the county, or even the region to start buying buildings like there was no freaking tomorrow. I said freaking. The gentrification of Midtown is happening. Some parts are slower than others, but some parts are incredibly fast, like the building the center was located in. First, you get informed that someone bought your home, and then they send this cute little email acting all warm and cuddly about it. Oh, can't wait to be your friend. Can't wait to work together. Just can't wait to be partners. We love having the gays here. And then the next thing you know, the monetary value of your space is so much higher than you are paying, and therefore we are going to have to triple or quadruple your rent. And if you, a nonprofit, in the middle of a pandemic can't afford that, then you have to leave. That's not exactly the voice, but that was my deep rendition.
It was pretty good.
I should be a voice actor.
You should.
Not only that, but the new building owner had the audacity to look me square in the face and tell me that we weren't doing a good enough job to stay in their building. And that absolutely crushed me, because I think we're working very hard and doing good work. So before we jump into why we didn't find a different or better space that immediately had everything we needed or wanted, the answer is we didn't have time to. White gentrification came in and pushed the queer people out. Maybe not forcefully, but the threat of getting kicked out put us into an emergency mode of thinking. We had some offers for spaces. We were shown suburban buildings with lots of space, but in areas that were not central to where the community is, and spaces that really were not keen on having massive rainbow flags covering everything. We were shown some centralized spaces, but they had absolutely no visibility or accessibility. We were shown a less than 1,000 square feet office space in the middle floor of a newly renovated office building. It had no windows and it had no open space. It was literally just columns. Then we were shown a basement, again, with no windows, no visibility. All throughout this search, it was like the clock was ticking away, like a horror movie or some psycho thriller movie. Each tick was louder as we all just waited for this new owner to say, get out. I found a tenant to pay a lot more money. Then we stumbled upon this new location and did a ridiculous number of tours. I'm pretty sure I was there probably like 10 times, and the real estate person was probably very upset. Like, Inoru, I just want to see my kids. I'm like, I know, but I just got to get one more measurement. It was affordable, if partnerships could be made, which are being made. It was still in Midtown. It was on the same block as well-known LGBTQI spaces, and the owner was thrilled to have us there. So given the limited budget, the context of the situation, it felt like the best decision. Not the perfect decision. The best decision. So had we not acted, there actually would have been a real possibility that the center would have closed its doors and not existed in the physical realm at all. Second, this new center space does not have everything right away. But we do not see this space is temporary. It's an investment. In our lease negotiations, we have the ability to do all the things that we want to do to the building to make sure it is perfect for us. Put in an elevator, remodel the back lot, install a new lobby. We even have the ability to purchase the building. Purchase. That's in the lease agreement, that if we amass the amount of money that the building is appraised at, we can purchase it and we can stay there forever. We will not get pushed out by gentrification, outside money. It will have to move around us. And that's so important. Third or fourth, we're just going to shove them all together. The center does not have a large budget. Sometimes it feels that way because you see some new peel and stick tile and you think, wow, that's a lot of money. That peel and stick tile is 87 cents a slice. Typically, wood flooring is like $6.50 per square foot, including installation. In 2020, our revenue intake was $57,000. Our operating budget is $53,000 to keep the doors open, the utilities going, the services going, and the people there to make sure the doors open. So no, this space does not have everything. It's not perfect right away, but this is an investment. And if you give me a magic wand and say, Inoru, make the universe as you see fit, I'll give you everything you want and need. But if I have to work inside of a system, I'm going to do it. And the last thing I need, in all honesty, is having people stand on the road of progress yelling at me for not taking wide enough strides while everyone else is just standing still. I'll see y'all later.
And that was One OK Rock. That was about the third time we played those guys on this show. I kind of really love them. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's edition of The 10th Voice, the final show for The Middle Way. Stay tuned. We will have more updates on the new 10th Voice as we sort of transition into this new period for the show. Stay tuned to KKFI because This Way Out is next, followed by Wings, and then come right back here at 3 o'clock where you'll hear another episode of Every Woman. I am Rachel, and you are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.